organizations ought to do that I think are not really threatened by AI.
Ben, thanks.
Thank you.
That's your Canada Land. I hope you enjoyed it. You can email me about it. I'm at jesse@canadaland.com. Our website is at canadaland.com. You don't need to Google it. Our senior producer is Bruce Thorson. Audio production and editing from Caleb Thompson. Today's episode's fact-checked by Julian Abraham. Our director of audio is Max Collins. I am the editor and publisher here at Canada Land. Our theme music is by So-Called. Syndication is handled by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. You can visit them online at cfuv.ca. Hi there. You just heard Canada Land, the show where I'm typically joined by a different guest each week for a long feature interview. What you're going to hear next is Canada Land Shortcuts, a topical news show where I'm joined by a different co-host each week, and we talk about the media's coverage of various stories in the news right now. Wait for it. I'm Jesse Brown, and today we are talking about the news. We're going to talk about a crypto scam that fleeced millions of dollars from Canadian musicians, because that's where the big money's at. We're going to talk about life after politics for Carney's campaign co-director. Turns out it's surprisingly lucrative. But mostly we're going to talk about CBC whistleblower Travis Danraj. Why won't he blow his own whistle?
They retaliated against him. They harassed him. He was being bullied by some senior correspondents in Ottawa. I think you can guess maybe who I'm talking about.
Wait for that. Jen Gerson of The Line, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Jen, have you heard the news about Travis Danraj?
I have indeed been following that news.
For most listeners, I think that the big news is that there's a guy named Travis Danraj. That'll be news to a lot of people. This is not like when Lisa Laflamme left very publicly, was fired, whatever, from CTV. Had you heard of him before?
Yes, I've heard of him before.
I knew of him as like a reporter.
Another pivotal moment in the investigation into Mayor Rob Ford. Travis Danraj is on our top story tonight. So Travis, this doesn't mean the investigation is over, though.
No, it sure doesn't, Mike. Toronto police say their investigation is continuing.
If your point is that he's less famous than Lisa Laflamme, point made.
I think my point is that there's a new genre of person leaves media organization, usually the CBC, angrily, where it's not so much like, oh my God, that person left, and it's not so much about who he is, but it's about the tell-all part.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that's an interesting thing to note, as long as you're also willing to get into why they left, if it's systemically important.
Let's talk about why Travis Danraj left, or I should say, why he tried to leave. According to his lawyer, the CBC refuses to accept his resignation. So he says that they have not let him go. I thought that you did not have to have, like, mutual consent to quit your job.
Yeah, well, it's not indentured servitude now, is it? So if he decided that he's not living there, if he's not working there anymore, I think we can take his word for it.
I don't know. One of my questions is, are they still paying him?
Yeah, you can't not accept someone's resignation. It's like I said, it's not indentured servitude. He's not an 18th century Irish immigrant.
I would have agreed with you, but the CBC's got some new moves here. Why don't we tell the people?
Okay, well, let's see how that works for them.
Let's tell the people what he said. He went out with a big public declaration. He wrote in an open letter, "This is an involuntary resignation. I am stepping down, not by choice, but because the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation has made it impossible for me to continue my work with integrity. After years of service, most recently as the host of Canada Tonight with Travis Danraj, I have been systemically sidelined, retaliated against, and denied the editorial access and institutional support necessary to fulfill my public service role. I took that role seriously. I worked to expand political balance, but what happens behind the scenes at CBC too often contradicts what is shown to the public. Performative diversity, tokenism, a system designed to elevate certain voices and diminish others. When I questioned these imbalances, I was met with silence, resistance, and eventually retaliation. I was fighting for balance and accused of being on a quote-unquote crusade." Holy shit. You don't hear that kind of stuff usually when people leave. Usually they leave quietly. That's pretty fiery stuff. I should note the CBC's position here. The CBC says they categorically reject Travis's allegations. And a CBC spokesperson says, quote, "We are saddened to see this public attack on the integrity of CBC News."
I don't know. To me, I just read this and I say, no shit, Sherlock. I mean, so there's a couple of things happening here. One, let's not be naive about, I don't really feel like I'm in a position to either attack or defend Travis because I don't know the specifics of his case. It sounds like, you know, he's hired a lawyer. The specifics of his allegations will be able to be examined and litigated in greater detail when they hit the courts or not, if the CBC decides to pay out some kind of settlement. Nobody here is equipped to provide unequivocal judgment on the specifics of Travis's allegations here. At this juncture, we don't have the details, right?
We can speculate wildly and irresponsibly, though.
We'll get there. I will get into the speculation wildly and irresponsibly. Just, Jesse, I just feel like I need to put that caveat right up front. Secondly, the other thing I would say is, obviously, there is a PR campaign that is accompanying Travis's case. I don't think it would be unreasonable to speculate that there's probably a legal strategy behind what he's alleging. That legal strategy may run the gamut from trying to make the case for constructive dismissal to simply trying to embarrass CBC into giving him a more fulsome severance package on the way out. I don't know exactly what his legal strategy is here, but the PR stuff is happening in tandem with a legal strategy, and we shouldn't be naive about that. But now, pivoting to the wild speculation, isn't this basically everything that Tara Henley was talking about a couple of years ago? Isn't this basically the same allegations that Tara Henley pointed out and was turned into Canadian media's greatest monster of the week for saying things that anybody with half an IQ point would have been able to observe about the CBC several years ago? I mean, look, Jesse, you're a media critic. You have to have had actual, real human conversations with people at the CBC in the last 5 years. Come the f*** off of it.
Oh, I'm not...
You know what's going on. Everybody knows what's going on.
Jen, I'm so inclined to argue with you. It would be so natural and easy for me to just start arguing. But I actually haven't taken a position against anything that Travis Danraj has said yet. You're just inferring from my sarcastic tone. I'm going to get to the reckless...
Yes, I'm inferring from your sarcastic tone. Please, prove me wrong. Please, show me the nuance that you have to bring to this conversation, Jesse.
I'll get there, and I may just take the bait and play the character you're asking me to play. But first, before we get there, or to my own reckless speculation, first of all, I still don't think most people know who we're talking about or what happened.
Sure.
So Travis Danraj is a journalist. He's somebody who I was aware of, kind of in the mix. He worked for Global News. He worked for CTV. I recall him covering Queen's Park here in Ontario. I remember him live-tweeting things from the Gomeshi trial. Here is what he sounded like earlier in his career, before his time at the CBC.
Hey, what's up, guys? My name is Travis Danraj, and we are here in New York City for one of the biggest nights in entertainment.
I don't know if a bad boy is what I need, but he absolutely has to be naughty.
Really? Naughty how?
Don't you want to know?
That sounds like we cherry-picked things that make him sound trivial.
Yeah, it does make it sound like you've cherry-picked things that make him sound trivial.
He did entertainment stuff. He did stuff with Bieber.
But yeah, I've also done entertainment stuff, Jesse. Do you want to try and make me sound trivial? Give it a shot.
I'm not that.
Look, you could cherry-pick stuff that I pulled out when I was in my 20s if you wanted to make me sound like a flake.
But there's nothing wrong with doing entertainment stuff.
What exactly is your point, Jesse?
That I agree with you.
Thank you.
I think what we're trying to get at with the pre-CBC Travis is that he sounded like a guy who worked for commercial media and not the CBC. He didn't sound like a CBC voice. And he did serious stuff. He did newsy stuff.
You kind of sidestepped the question yesterday about whether or not you feel a woman should have the right to choose. Why can't you answer that question directly?
Well, number one, it's a federal issue. Number two,
but abortions are being funded through OHIP in this province.
But in saying that, I'll make it very clear. I'm not touching that issue.
And then he gets hired by the CBC. And there's a certain point in the history of the anchors of the CBC where I will admit I stopped paying attention. Like, Janela Massa was the last CBC anchor who made a big splash when she got that job, because Canada had not seen a Muslim woman wearing a hijab in that role before as CBC anchor. She seemed like on a trajectory to be like a big news personality at the CBC. And then she was like, yeah, no thanks. I'm just leaving. Which, that was interesting. And then Travis was the guy who they hired to replace her. And here's what he sounded like as he tried to settle into the role of CBC anchor.
From the Canadian Broadcasting Center, this is Canada Tonight with Travis Danraj.
And hello to you on this Monday night. Here is what else we are tracking tonight. The showdown in New Hampshire. Our Katie Simpson will tee up Donald Trump and Nikki Haley facing off in tomorrow's primary. Plus, the former president...
I found him more or less unremarkable as a CBC anchor with a couple of exceptions. There was an interview he did with Mansbridge where he, like, I think he knew that Mansbridge had some salty things to say about CBC management.
And so do you think the president of CBC, Catherine Tate, is doing a good job in making the case?
You know, I'm not a fan of the current administration.
Why?
I just don't think it's being handled well. I think they could have seen this coming a long time ago.
And then he went public on Twitter, Travis Danraj did, criticizing Catherine Tate because he wanted to interview her when she announced that even though she was laying off CBC journalists, she wouldn't rule out giving executives bonuses and she wouldn't come and answer his questions about that. And I did think, this guy does not seem like just another CBC voice doing what he's told. There's something interesting about him. Beyond that, I was not terribly aware of what he was doing, and I only found out about it since he quit and had this long list of allegations, which has since resulted in, I don't know, like a string of coverage, mostly from Post Media. Brian Lilly seems to have been fed the story. It broke through Brian Lilly at the Toronto Sun.
The CBC host says, I quit. CBC says, not so fast. What's the story with Travis Danraj? Hi, I'm Brian Lilly, political columnist for the Toronto Sun.
And then there has been like story after story from the Sun and the National Post. Chris Sully writing, we'll thank Travis Danraj for pulling back the curtain on CBC News. Leslie Roberts, of all people, CBC has eroded trust in journalism. It must be reformed. Leslie Roberts, who was caught moonlighting, delivering messages from his PR clients when he was last a news anchor.
Jesse, just stop.
I got more. This isn't me. It's not me. It's Post Media.
I get it. Post Media has been on the CBC crusade for reasons of their own ideological fealty and ideological alignment. Nobody disputes this. We can get into all of that if you want. But my question to you is, what does Travis Danraj's remarkability or lack of remarkability have to do with anything? The reason why this bothers me so much is that this guy is coming out, rightly or wrongly, like maybe he has legitimate grievances against the CBC, maybe he doesn't have legitimate grievances against the CBC, and all of this is an orchestrated campaign on his part in order to gratify his own ego or to shoot him into stardom or just get a better severance package. Like, maybe that's what's happening here. I don't know.
Do you not know that?
Maybe it's both, Jesse. But what I do know is that you have an individual who is deciding to come out and take a stand against his corporation, say F you to his pension, say F you to his union job, to F out his boss, the most senior member of his team. Clearly something has gone wrong that has devolved the relationship. And now he wants to come back and lay out some public allegations against his employer. I'm not in a position, as I stated up front, to evaluate those public allegations against his lawyer because I don't have them in detail yet. But whether or not he was a good or a bad anchor is not really actually that relevant to the point. And a lot of organizations, for example, will try to undermine the credibility of whistleblowers within their own organizations by saying, well, this person wasn't really very remarkable, let's be honest with ourselves. Because if they're using that kind of weird ad hominem Darvoing to try and undermine their credibility and ability to make an allegation. I think we should be evaluating Travis Danraj's allegations on the merits of his allegations, not on like what he was doing in his entertainment life, nor on whether or not you personally found him to be an effective anchor.
Jen, let's duly note some stories to make sure that people don't miss them. What do you have to duly note today?
Well, look, from the Globe and Mail, Carney campaign director launches strategic firm as new Liberal government gets to work. Yay, you've got the Liberal Party's campaign co-directors launching a new strategic firm with a roster of political governance and policy experts in a bid to translate the party's successful campaign blueprint into one for the private sector. Why exactly does a political campaign co-chair create a consultancy firm? Why does he do that?
To monetize their political capital?
That's right. That's the only reason to have a firm like that exist. Because a company will then go to that campaign co-chair, say, I need to get this on the agenda, or I need to get this policy shift moved, or I need to get this investment made. Who do I need to lobby? Who do I need to access? How do I need to present this? What's the grassroots media campaign that I need in order to make that shift happen? And the person who has just sat at the right hand of God, for all intents and purposes, helps him create a strategy to allow him to leverage nodes of power in the system as it exists. That's how this really works.
It's called influence peddling. We used to talk about the family compact. It's how Canada Canada's. And there's, I think, a central conundrum to the national project that we're embarking upon right now, or supposedly doing, which is like we're trying to grow up. The promise here is that it's time for Canada to grow up and to actually achieve its real productivity and be self-sufficient. And probably in order to do that, we have to overcome this cronyism, this influence peddling. It's toxic to any kind of like real system based on merit and innovation and efficiency to have cronyism rule. However, in the doing of trying to move forward.
Yeah, it's almost like we're having to lean further into the family compact in order to make the infrastructure and systemic changes that are required in order to make us less dependent on the family.
Thank you, yes.
There you go.
Yeah. No, that's right.
That's the problem.
Yeah, and I think our role is simply just tell the people how it works.
And swear into the abyss.
And swear like sailors. Duly f***ing noted. I want to duly note a story that's a little bit different than I was, I think, predisposed to think it was. When I heard that the music nonprofit Factor had about $10 million go missing, I thought that this was going to be a story about the usual kind of, well, very micro-scale influence peddling and helping friends out kind of stuff that happens within tiny little arts organizations in Canada. And that's not this story at all. So Factor is, you know, they get like $15 million a year from the government or something, and they dole it out in tiny little amounts to Canadian musicians. And there have been problems with it in the past where like individual musicians are like stabbing each other in the back to get tiny little grants, but the same labels get the bigger grants. And, you know, Factor's got all its issues like everything else in Canadian arts. But this has nothing to do with any of that. It's a sad story where the poor woman who's been doing their books pressed the wrong button and got fished by a Scotiabank impersonator website and entered the credentials in, and some, I'm not going to call him a asshole because the allegations are unproven, but a crypto dude then was involved in a transaction.
We can literally call every single crypto dude a asshole. We don't need to worry about libel law coming down on us for that one.
The transfer from Factor was to buy 2,800 crypto mining rigs.
I don't even know what a crypto mining rig is.
Not something that Factor has really bought before, but nobody seemed to notice. To the question of whether or not we can call him an a**hole or not, this story by Josh O'Kane, it includes this detail about this guy who may be the perpetrator, which is what Factor alleges, or he may be the duped middleman, which is his defense. But it's certainly worth noting that after he was involved in this transfer of like $9.8 million out of Factor's account and towards a company called Virgo CX, he suggested to the Virgo CX rep that they have dinner in Montreal and go somewhere upbeat, surrounded by hot chiquitas. Now, that does not mean that he's guilty of fraud of any kind. And Jen, somehow most of the annual budget for this arts organization got swindled away from them, and Scotiabank markets itself by the virtues of its online fraud protection. They'll protect you against online fraud. They'll make you whole. What do we have bank accounts for? But in this case, they say, no, we're not liable. This is not, it's $9.8 million. This is clearly Factor's fault. If you read this story by Josh O'Kane, which is very well reported, you'll read that like the usual transaction from this bank account is like a few $1,000s, $10,000. At most, there was a $1 million transfer to their own other bank account. So for there to be a $9.8 million transaction from Factor's bank account to some external crypto organization, and for Scotiabank not to just, something's up here. Somebody new has been added to the account. Somebody has been taken off the account. And now this massive transfer of money has happened, and we're just going to let it go.
So let me get this straight. I go for a weekend trip to the States, and I get rejected at the storefront for like buying a sweater downtown. And my banking company loses its god mind because I'm buying a hot dog in San Francisco. And like Scotiabank couldn't spot a $10 million transfer out of an arts fund.
To be fair, you are a woman of ill repute. So
well, that's, nobody disputes that point. Don't ask me what I did with the hot dogs afterwards. Some hot chiquitas may have been involved.
Dear God. This is a very sad story. At a sad time because like these arts organizations, which are the subject of so much attention and consideration, and how do I get money from the Canadian Media Fund? And everybody in the arts is like, in Canada, where do you get money from? You get money from one of these organizations. The organizations themselves don't have a pot to in, and they're in worse shape than ever because now corporate sponsorship has dried up, because now if you donate money to an arts organization, you might get picketed for it. So all of the organizations are in terrible shape, and Factor, which artists rely on for very small amounts of money so they can record their albums, is out $9.8 million and has spent another million trying to recover it. Lawyer fees and court fees and things like that. You know what? Scotiabank, like, $9.8 million is a f***ing drop in the bucket for Scotiabank. Canadian banks, that's a whole other story. They make out like bandits in ways that would not be acceptable in other places. Wouldn't it be a good look for them just to make Factor whole?
That would be nice.
Well, I'm a nice guy.
Duly noted.
That is our show for today. Jen, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me. I've had lots of fun.
Me too.
Despite screaming at you. That's always just, but that's just part of the fun.
That's part of the fun. I can be emailed about this program at jesse@canadaland.com. I read all the emails that people send. Jen Gerson, where can people find you?
You can go check me out at www.readtheline.ca.
Readtheline.ca. Check it out. This episode is produced by James Nicholson. Our associate producer is Lucy Lemonnier. Mixing and mastering by Tristan Capicchione. Our director of audio at Canada Land is Max Collins, who also did the fact check on this episode. I am Canada Land's editor and publisher. Our theme music is by So-Called. Syndication is handled by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. You can visit them online at cfuv.ca.